This show is furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervie. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervie and Carrie Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KBC.com and Alexa. I am Alan Gervie, the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn. And today, as usual, I'm here to be the managing partner of your life, and I'm here with Carrie Kasem, and she is smiling and laughing because she has no idea the relevance of that music.
Are you kidding me?
Well, tell us.
What, the royal music for the royals that we're going to have on today, or the royal?
Wait a
second. Talking about royals?
I thought that was for the memorial for George Floyd.
No, I thought this was the royal stuff.
I mean, there's something else that actually is going on in the world other than protests in America?
There are. I mean, you know, if you turn on the news, you wouldn't think so. But there are. There's other things.
No, there isn't. The only victims' rights, the only human rights that we should all be thinking of through the entire world is those of the protests and the looting and the rioting in America.
No, I think there's a lot of human rights going on that, you know, there's a lot of, unfortunately, people all over the world whose human rights are violated, people being trafficked, elder abuse, what's happening right now. But there's so much of it. Unfortunately, it's very true.
Carrie, don't say that all lives matter, though. Please don't say that.
What are you talking about? I'm going to, you know what?
No, I don't want you to be racist. I don't want you to be racist. I do not want you to be racist.
I'm just going
to
let you keep talking.
I don't want you to say all lives matter, but I'll tell you, there are some really interesting stories that people should focus on. And here in LA, we don't hear a lot. And, you know, in the United States, overall, we don't hear a lot about the story that we're going to talk about today, but maybe we should. Maybe we should have a greater understanding of the world around us and not be so provincial to just focus on our own problems, which there are many. And hopefully people are working through these problems as we speak. We know they are because there's people walking all over LA, protesting right now. But there are other problems in this world that involve human rights, that involve victim rights, that maybe we should think about others, not just about ourselves.
I agree with that.
No, you don't.
I do. Well, you know what? I'm putting us up right now in our little video where you tell everybody to watch us.
Oh, is that what you're doing?
Yeah. Where you say, watch us. How is that possible?
I thought you were just doing your Facebook stuff.
Of course not. I never do that on this show. Ever.
All right. Well, let's get right to it because we have a very intriguing story that a lot of people aren't aware of, and we want to talk about it. We're talking about what is going on in the United Arab Emirates, Dubai. Have you ever been to Dubai, by the way?
I have. I love it there. It's beautiful.
Well, you better not say that because we're not promoting tourism to Dubai today.
Okay. It's probably one of the most unique places I've ever been. They had outside air conditioning. I've never seen that before in my life. You're at a mall, you're walking around, and there's literally outside air conditioning.
Yes.
And you can go to the beach, or you can walk across to the mall with the $300 million like ski resort.
Yes, and I've skied there.
Oh, you have?
Of course.
Oh, well,
you know
okay.
Me.
Well, yeah.
I've spent a lot of time in Dubai. But maybe I won't after this. My mother we celebrated my mother's 80th birthday in Dubai.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, why don't I remember that?
Burj Khalifa.
Oh, the Burj Khalifa.
Yeah, that's
beautiful.
Where we were.
Yeah.
After we hear the story today, maybe people don't want to go for
other reasons.
Human rights reasons.
Yeah.
But let's get to the bottom of it. So tell us the story, Carrie, because I can't stand watching you. I'm in studio with you here.
Yes.
And I can't stand watching you on your cell phone. I mean, it's ridiculous.
You know
what
I'm trying to do your social media for you.
It's too
free.
Late. It's too late.
We do this every week. And now you're killing me.
Do it 10 minutes before the
show.
But
we can't.
Okay, tell the story. I want to hear the story. I want you to know. I want to know if you know the story of Princess Latifah. And we're not talking about Queen Latifah here.
No,
I know you know about Queen Latifah.
No, look,
we're talking about Princess Latifah.
You know, you've heard rumors about stuff like this, stuff like this happening in the Middle East a lot, where, you know, there's somebody who doesn't want to be married to somebody, especially a daughter. And if they are married to someone they don't want to be married to, sometimes they'll try and escape. Sometimes they'll be killed. Sometimes you'll never hear from them again and wonder what happened. And we have one of those cases today where, you know, somebody tried to escape the royal family and almost made it, got caught, and was never seen again except one public appearance they say she's made. Very interesting, though, Alan. You know, I think if I was put in a situation where I had to be married to somebody or I had to do things I didn't want to do, I'd probably try and escape as well.
Well, I think we all would,
yeah.
Especially as far as women's rights go, because if you watch the video from March 11, 2018 of Princess Latifah from Dubai, you will really understand the pain that she has suffered through this whole ordeal, if you want to believe it. Of course, you don't have to believe it, but if you do believe it, it's very sad.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, it's weird how we have connections to shows. Last week, when we had Lorena Bobbitt on, was it last week or the week before? No, it was 2 weeks ago.
Was it 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, Lorena Bobbitt. And you had that weird connection with having your nails done.
By her.
By her.
Yeah.
Where was that? You had your nails
done
by her?
In Virginia. In Virginia. So my cousin was stationed in D.C., lived right outside of D.C. in Virginia. And he said, look, you know, Lorena Bobbitt does nails right down the street from my house. So we went and got them done. It was very interesting.
So this week I have a strange connection, and it's a real remote one. It's nothing. I don't know Princess Latifah personally, but my debate partner in university, in college at Brown University, through some of the debates, was Faisal Hussein.
Oh.
And Faisal Hussein is the son of King Hussein,
yeah,
from Jordan. And how does that connect it to our story today?
Well, I have to tell you something else if you want to do 6 degrees of separation. I had dinner with Queen Noor, who was married to King Hussein.
That's right.
And my father, Noor meant light, and I think her name was Lisa. She went to UCLA.
It was. She also graduated from Princeton.
Yes. Very smart, beautiful woman.
And another smart, beautiful woman, Haya, who was the youngest wife,
yeah,
of Sheikh Mohammed Al Maktoum. From Dubai, has fled and landed in England, in, yeah, London. And that's where we're going right now.
And that's where our story begins, folks.
Our story begins in London. I want to introduce our guests, and we're thanking them for staying up late with us live today here in L.A. They are in London. We have David Haig, who's a human rights lawyer, international crisis and media manager. He's the former managing director of the Leeds United Football Club and CEO and founder of the Sports Capital Group. He spent 22 months in prison in Dubai for an alleged fraud charge, and he was tortured and raped there. And he has taken on the cause of Princess Latifah and the FreeLatifah.com. That's hashtag FreeLatifah.com. He's on the line with us, as well as Princess Latifah's cousin, Marcus Asabri, who has not seen Princess Latifah for many, many years. And he is also in London. He was born Fatima Asabri. He is now Marcus Asabri. Gentlemen, David and Marcus, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
Well, it's great to have you, because this is something that I think a lot of people need to hear about. And David, does it surprise you that a lot of people in the United States, specifically here in LA and other places, are not aware of the situation that you have been fighting so hard for Princess Latifah?
It's not a little bit, because we're going to get more detail to what happened, but 27 months ago,
You know, are you near your phone for some reason? And there's a echo, and it sounds like you're far away.
It sounds like you're still in prison in Dubai. Can you?
Is that better?
Oh, yes. Much better. Thank you.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So 27 months ago, an American flight yacht carrying Princess Latifah in international waters was attacked. So one would expect that it being an American flight yacht would have attracted a lot more attention in the States than things have. So it does surprise me a little bit, but hopefully we can change that now.
So when we talk about the current situation, now recently there was a high court decision in the UK that indicated somehow, and you can explain to us being an attorney, or I guess a barrister solicitor, you can explain to us what that decision meant in terms of acknowledging that maybe Princess Latifah was not in Dubai, if she's alive, on her own and has been under a lot of pressure and perhaps torture to stay there.
It's a very long story that started 27 months ago. But in terms of the High Court judgment that you mentioned, as you mentioned earlier, a lady called Princess Haya of Jordan, who is Latifah's stepmother and was the latest wife of Latifah's father, earlier this year, we know that she found out essentially what had happened, earlier last year rather, she'd found out what had happened to Princess Latifah, that Princess Latifah had been abducted off an American boat off the coast of Goa in India and returned against her will to Dubai. She found that out, and she herself was scared for her life and those of her own children. So she fled Dubai to England, and then they became a very high-profile divorce and custody case in England, which has been playing out in the High Court since summer of last year. The result of that was that in November last year, the High Court in England came to what's called a fact-finding judgment over whether or not two of Sheikh Mohammed, who's the ruler of Dubai, and Princess Haya's husband, had abducted two of his children, that being Princess Latifah and Latifah's sister Shamsa. That was, of course, very relevant to whether or not the custody of Princess Haya's children should be decided and how that should be decided. That became public in only March this year because Sheikh Mohammed was fighting to keep that secret and out of the press. Mm. And in that fact-finding judgment, it was very, very clear where the judge, a gentleman called Sir Andrew McFarlane, who's the highest family court judge in England, made a fact-finding that Princess Latifah was indeed abducted by her father, as was her sister, Princess Shamsa.
And Sheikh Mohammed said that he couldn't attend because of his obligations to his state and to his country and to his district. What would have happened if he would have testified or presented evidence on his own behalf to try to give an excuse or at least present both Latifah and Shamsa saying that they are fine and there's no reason to have this fact-finding of abduction?
That's the very odd thing that you used the word excuse very well, that Sheikh Mohammed came with, because this was his original application in England. It wasn't Princess Haya's. He made the application against Princess Haya. So he first went to the UK courts. It also became clear he wasn't going to get what he wanted, and then he tried to retract from that. And it's telling to note that when the hearings about the custody of his children and his actions on others were going ahead in the High Court in England, he was buying horses at a racecourse in Newmarket.
Wow. There's so much intrigue. Go ahead, Carrie. You wanted
to... No, I know that we have to take a break real quick, but I just want to know if either of you think that harm has come to Latifah, do you think that she's actually still living?
Marcus?
It's one of the worry.
Oh, we can't hear you.
All right, you know what? We're having trouble. Yeah. We're going to take a break, and hopefully we can fix that. We'll pick up that question because I think a lot of people who are hearing this story for the first time really want to hear about David and Marcus's opinion. Obviously, you don't have the knowledge, unfortunately, as to her well-being. Again, if you have time during this break, take a look. Google Princess Latifah to see what she looks like. You don't have time to listen to the video right now, but you will shortly. We need to take a break. We're talking to David Haig and Marcus Asabri, and you're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. Yeah, we're back. I'm Alan Gervey. She is Carrie Kasem. And we are talking to David Haig and Marcus Asabri. We're talking about the disappearance of Princess Latifah in Dubai, where we're assuming she's in Dubai. And there's a compelling story about Latifah trying to escape her country from her father, Sheikh Mohammed Al Maktoum, who is the leader, and brought back under some really, very questionable circumstances back into the country. And before the break, Carrie was asking David and Marcus if they had any opinions as to the well-being of Latifah and how anyone would know. And maybe a more interesting question is, why can't anyone figure out what's going on? Why she had no contact when, for all intents and purposes, she had been communicating pretty well with her friends and other people before? David?
Well, we know from the judgment of that was issued in the case of Princess Haya earlier this year, we know the last time that Princess Haya saw her, that she was essentially, for want of a better phrase, some form of a kind of a jail house, surrounded by policemen. So we know that, and that we know that she was obviously alive then. We also know that the UAE have maintained the line, which we know to be false, that she's at home, safe, in the loving care of her family. And of course, in addition to that, there's an ongoing United Nations investigation, which we started with a complaint almost 2 years ago, which is likely to come to a conclusion following the judgment of Haya. So those are all the things that we know for a fact. So, of course, we are very worried about her well-being. We know from her video testimony, which your listeners can watch themselves on the internet, and which was referred to as a finding of fact by the judge in the High Court in England, that Latifah obviously spent 2 years of her, two decades of her life trying to escape, and this is the second time she was captured and detained against her will. So we know from previous the previous capture of her by her father, the torture and the abuse that she suffered for several years. So we're, of course, extremely, extremely worried. And Marcus will be able to tell you a little bit more about that, obviously coming from a family perspective.
Now, assuming we have a better connection with Marcus, and I believe you're in Glasgow, Marcus, I want to ask you... Okay, that sounds better. First of all, let us know a little bit about your relationship. Now, you were born in Morocco, and it's on her mother's side, on Latifah's mother's side, your cousin. Tell us the background and who you still are in touch with from the family, if anyone, because it sounds like you haven't had a lot of contact with the family, having not seen Latifah since you were 9 or 10 years old.
Yes, I mean, basically, I lived there when I was young, and so my relationship with the girls, you know, were first cousins. So my aunt is my mother's sister. So and I grew up with Shamsa. We were very close, and I did spend some time and holidays with the girls, and you know, of course, so you know, we were very close. So, you know, we still have concerns about, you know, their health and their safety and how they're being treated. But
what is your opinion? What is your opinion? What's going on with them now? Where do you think they are? Do you think they're safe?
And do you have any inside information from your family or extended family as to why you have that opinion?
Well, my family are pretty much not talking to me and punishing me for wanting to help my cousins. But what people don't know is actually my aunt is behind all this. She's the one who first punished me for wanting to help my cousins. Because Shamsa, when I was living in Dubai, Shamsa asked me to help. So when I came to England, she kept writing to me and calling me and asking me to support her to come to the UK. And because I was communicating with her, then my aunt started to turn their dad against us. But a lot of people are just looking at Sheikh Mohammed, but actually my aunt is just as she is, you know, behind all this. When she has her herself used to have a had a house in Spain and had a Spanish lover, so she was living her life, but not wanting her daughters to be to have that freedom.
Has Sheikh Mohammed had any contact with you, or any of his henchmen? Have they gone after you at all, or tried to silence you, or perhaps your aunt has tried to silence you?
Yeah, my aunt, yes. My aunt has any assets that I had in the UK. She made sure that I had no family support from anyone. So no one in the family will talk to me, even from my mother's side. And, you know, they don't want anything to do with me. She turned everybody against me, saying that I'm the one who's causing all these problems, when the only thing I'm trying to do is help my cousins.
Now, is there anything that you can do law-wise, and maybe this is a question for David, but why is it, and I know there are different, each country has a different set of laws, but why is it okay that somebody has completely disappeared and you know, they cannot demand to hear from these people to make sure they're okay, even like a welfare check?
In this day and age, you would think that you would be able to.
I mean, that's a human right.
Can't she text us
something,
and say, I'm okay?
Something.
David?
Sorry, you broke up then. Could you just repeat that? Sorry.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if there's any way that the law could move to demand to make sure that Latifa is okay, is physically okay.
Well, I mean, one of the things that we did over 2 years ago is that we filed a complaint with the United Nations Working Group on Enforcement of Voluntary Disappearances, that Latifa's human rights were severely breached. Mm-hmm. And that's taken some time, as things do in the UN. But following the judgment on the Princess Hayas case, because it's a very, very clear judgment from, as I said earlier, the highest family court judge in the UK, that basically says these Princess Latifa and Princess Shamsa were abducted against their will and are held in captivity in Dubai against their will. So it's a very, very clear finding of fact. So that's been given to the UN, and we're now expecting the UN to come to similar conclusions.
You know, we have to take, David, we have to take a quick break, but I do want to pick that up after the break. I want to talk a little bit about Mary Robinson of the UN human rights official, mm-hmm. and talk about her meeting with Latifa, which I believe was the last time anyone was with her that you have perhaps spoken to, in December of 2018. And that will certainly support what you're saying about the UN investigation. You listen to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Yeah, we're back. I'm Alan Gervie. She's Carrie Kasem. We were talking to David Haig and Marcus Asabri about the disappearance of Princess Latifa in Dubai. And before the break, David, you were mentioning that you're waiting on the UN for a report. Did you have an opportunity to speak to Mary Robinson, who was last seen with Latifa in December 2018? And where were they? Did Latifa say anything to Mary that she was able to pass on to you as the human rights lawyer for Latifa? David?
Hi. Yeah, sorry. It's a bad line, I think. Could you repeat the question?
I wish I could. You know, I feel like I'm in a court in a trial, because I often will give these long-winded questions and the judge says, can you repeat that question, Mr. Gervie? And I'm like, I don't think I can. Miss Court Reporter, can you please read it back?
You're used to the court reporters.
So the question, David, is about Mary Robinson, who was last with Latifa in December 2018. There's a picture of them together. Did you have an opportunity? Go ahead.
It was in December 2018.
Yeah.
There was a BBC documentary that was produced on Princess Latifa, and the United Nations had issued a release about their intentions if the UAE did not respond to them. And it was perhaps one or both of those things which we believe pushed the UAE to take action. And on your listeners can decide whether or not this was deliberate on the part of the UAE and their propaganda machine. on Christmas Eve 2018 pictures of a very unwilling and unwell-looking Latifah were released with Mary Robinson, former president of Ireland and the former UN Commissioner for Human Rights. But if anyone looks at those pictures, which are still available on the internet, it was a meeting which apparently happened with Mary Robinson and Princess Haya. And it's very much probably a meeting which somewhat backfired on the UAE and their obvious attempts to whitewash what had happened to the Haya said in interviews after that meeting, a phrase which now, when we look at what's happened with her, also fleeing Dubai, she said that if I believe for a minute that if anything that Latifah had said in her video was true, I wouldn't stand for it and I wouldn't be here. And as we know, she isn't there anymore and she certainly didn't stand for it. So that meeting obviously backfired. And it can be said that it almost started essentially the divorce and the custody that we see playing out in perhaps one of the biggest divorce and custody cases since Charles and Diana in England.
Wow. You know, there are so many elements to this. And Marcus, I want to bring you in the conversation now. You've been working with David and, of course, with Tiina Jahanian, who is a Finnish native who was best friends or good friends with Princess Latifah, her private instructor in martial arts that became very friendly. She was with Latifah when they fled Dubai and almost made it to India before they were intercepted by the Indian commandos who boarded the ship. Marcus, have you had an opportunity to talk to Tiina and find out, and Tina's in UK now, to find out what she has or what she knows or what she has been working on to try and help as well?
Yeah, I mean, it was obviously an overwhelming feeling when I met with when Tiina found me and was able to inform me of a lot of the things that Latifah wanted me to know about what was happening to her. First, it was a shock to know that this could be happening to them to that extent.
What did she tell you? Can you tell us what she told you?
Well, she told me a lot about the torture, about how her mother was treating her, that they were not allowed education, no freedom to go, not allowed to travel and come and see family, and that you know, she was desperate to live a free life, you know, be with family and friends outside of Dubai.
How was Tiina able to maintain her friendship? Now, she was an instructor of hers, but apparently they were able to maintain a close enough relationship that they could plan together to escape. How did that occur, Marcus?
Well, obviously, in Dubai, women can mix. And so because Tiina worked with Latifah, so it wasn't suspicious. So they were able to be close and spend time together, and they must have planned this kind of privately.
Now, David, you spent considerable time in Dubai. In fact, you were imprisoned for 22 months for an alleged fraud charge. Tell us your experience with Dubai. You're somewhat of an expert, and obviously within the prison system. You've indicated that you were tortured and raped while you were in prison. What did you learn from that experience, and how has that impacted you as you help Princess Latifah in this human rights violation?
Well, I lived in total in Dubai for 10 years. 8 of those years, I had no problems, and I lived like you began at the beginning of this piece, saying that Dubai, you know, I thought at the time Dubai was a great place, but I lived very much in a bubble. And I didn't see all the human rights abuses that basically create this country, whether it's the laborers that actually work for terrible wages, the abuses and the injustices. I then had a falling out with my then employers, who, when I was living in England running a football club, lured me back into Dubai. And then, for want of a better phrase, essentially set me up. And I was, first of all, detained in arbitrary detention for 15 months for a thing called breach of trust. And then thereafter, 6 months monks in jail for Twitter abuse. And so I saw through that horrific, you know, not just what happened to myself, but what happened to other people. Because I was somewhat high profile having run a football club, as soon as I returned to England, then a lot of people contacted me who had relatives that were also suffering abuses. And then I started to help them. And Latifa is one of those people. But it is extensive in the UAE. The abuses that you see in terms of in unjust situations, to the extent that our own high courts in England refuse to extradite anyone from the UK to the UAE on the grounds of real risk of human rights abuses. And Latifa is just one of the many people who see their human rights abuses. This is a lady that spent two decades of her life trying to leave the country, a lady that is the daughter of the ruler with immeasurable wealth, but it's still, she didn't want to take part in that. And then you look at also all the expatriates, English, American, other Europeans that are also suffering. So like I said, I saw an awful lot of extreme and extensive abuse, not just to expats, but also to their own people.
Now, what, if anything, is this movement doing? I mean, there's 4.4 million views on Latifa's video. Is it shaming the family? Are they, I mean, there's, I'm wondering, what have you heard what this has done?
In the video, Carrie, Latifa specifically says that her father is so concerned about his...
Right, the way he looks
stature,
and what he's doing. Yeah.
You know, the public opinion about him.
Yes.
So I guess, you know, what we can ask them is, does it have an impact? And have you encouraged other people to watch the video? Because apparently that's what Latifa believes. Princess Latifa believes that her father, the king, or actually the Sheikh Mohammed, will be impacted and affected if people have a bad impression of him and perhaps don't go to visit the country.
Right.
Well, Latifa, she knows her father better than certainly I do, and she predicted very well in her video what the UAE would attempt to do. One of the first things she said was they would try and discredit her and her video. And right at the beginning, you know, 27 months ago, the UAE propaganda arm, for want of a better phrase, were basically trying to deny that all of this had happened. Latifa didn't exist, and this wasn't true. And then what they started to do, there's actually three Princess Latifas. Arwen is the middle one. So they then pumped out fake news about the other two, trying to distract all the media and think, oh, well, nothing to see here, go away. That then didn't work. They then tried the Mary Robinson PR stunt. That then didn't work. And it went on and on and on. And as Latifa said quite rightly, the only thing her father cares about is his reputation. And that's why we release the video, and that's why we continue to do media, because the one thing that Dubai needs is the West and tourism, particularly now, as we look with this terrible virus that's spreading the world. Dubai doesn't have much oil money. They need the tourists. They need people from America to go there and sit on their beaches and party in their clubs. They need people from England to go there and party in their clubs. But is that what we should be doing in the West, supporting the abuse, that the consistent abuse and institutionalized abuse of women?
When we talk about the defenses as attorneys, we're looking at what is the UAE saying officially. And you've mentioned, David, you talked about them basically saying that they're okay and that they're adored and cherished by her family. That's both Shamsa and Latifa. Have they also said that Latifa and Haya had mental health problems? All these issues, is anyone buying it outside of UAE?
I think the answer is no. I mean, you know, Marcus can tell you a little bit more about that. But, you know, Latifa spent two decades, much like Shamsa, trying to escape this country. A UK judge has found that they were abducted against their will and taken back to Dubai against their will. You know, and it's very much like, you know, in the Victorian times, certainly in England, when, you know, you had ladies that wouldn't do what was required of them, a single mother, someone like that, they were classed as mentally unwell. And you can look at Dubai looking at that in a similar way. You know, Latifa is a strong, independent woman, and as is Haya. And just because they go against this male guardianship system, whereby under the culture there, people assume that, that no woman can make a decision for herself without the say-so of a man in her family. I mean, Marcus will be able to tell you more about that, but...
You know,
certainly in the West, no one is buying that.
We do have to take a break, and we'll ask Marcus after the break to pick up on it. But it's interesting when you talk about mental health problems, everything that you've just articulated, David, I think would cause mental health problems, depending on how you want to define them, but certainly has an impact. And I think Haya has said it, and I'm sure Latifa has as well. And we can talk to Marcus about that after the break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yeah, there you go. There's some headbanging music that probably...
headbanging in what?
They're not playing in Dubai right now. Although I know you had a good time there. As did I
did. I had a good time.
I feel bad, though.
It's horrible.
Now I feel bad because I really enjoyed it. And you know, like David Haig said, you know, he lived there without incident for many years, not knowing the behind-the-scenes story. And speaking of that, Marcus Asabri, we're talking about, before the break, about the mental state, specifically Latifa, Princess Haya as well. When Latifa was captured, she said, "Don't take me back to Dubai. Just shoot me here." That's what Tina, her friend, had reported, who was on the boat at the time. What is your perspective, Marcus, on the mental state and whether Latifa can recover from this, hoping for a good result in getting her freedom?
I mean, for sure, I know that Latifa, in some sense, you know, their mental health is, they are fine. There is no signs, I mean, you know, there's no signs of that they are not well. The only thing that they want is freedom and the freedom of speech and to live a normal life like you and me have. That's what they're asking for. They are not asking for anything else. Now, if that is mental health, then, you know, I don't understand it. But my hope is that I have tried to contact the family there. I, you know, just because as a member of the family, I want to make sure that they are all right. So, and we're lucky that obviously from Haya having been there the last and, you know, seeing Shamsa, so we have at least some knowledge that they are okay.
Has there been any backlash against you, Marcus, from the family when you've contacted? Because you were born a girl, Fatima. You're now a male, a transgender. Does that play any part in this, given what we know about certain beliefs in the Middle East and perhaps not accepting your change and your position in life?
I mean, no one talks to me. I live in the UK, so I guess I am blessed being in the UK, and I do feel safe being here in the UK. You know, I think because of the culture, I think as a male, I should be respected more.
That's a good point. I never thought of that.
It's true.
That's
very true.
Very true. You know, David, I want to pick up on what Marcus is saying because I think his comments are really important. You battled PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, after your experience in prison in Dubai. How did you deal with it, and what could you recommend to perhaps Shamsa and Latifa going through this?
Well, even, since I was acquitted of Twitter abuse,
wow.
I laugh about it because it's just so ironic that I would be jailed for 5 months for Twitter abuse. But I was acquitted on Good Friday and I returned home on Good Friday in 2016. Since then, on and off, I spent about 6 months in hospital having a thing called EMDR, which is a bit like something you could kind of, I'm sure psychologists are telling me off for saying this, but something like kind of total recall in terms of you kind of reprogram the brain from the bad memories.
Yes, and I have a lot of clients actually who have benefited from it, from the eye movement, and it's a really important therapeutic.
Very good.
Yeah.
So I've had about I've been in and out of hospital for about 6 months for that for the broken mind, but also you know, a similar amount for broken bones, etc. But also, I mean, you know, Tina, who's not on the call at the moment, but who you know is very much campaigning for the people's release. She was also you know, kidnapped alongside her best friend and taken back to Dubai and held in a secret jail. And this is a Finnish citizen, so I'm also suffering from PTSD, because you know you can imagine seeing your best friend taken at gunpoint by hundreds of men in the middle of the ocean. It's to say it's a movie is an understatement. So. I'm sure everyone involved is suffering, certainly in terms of Latifa, she, you know, this is a very strong, independent, woman I certainly don't agree with what the UAE would say that she's not well, because if you look at it, everyone that seems to disagree with Sheikh Mohammed, every woman that disagrees with Sheikh Mohammed, he points the finger
in trouble.
She's not mentally well.
Right. Ugh. They're in trouble. So it's interesting you bring up a movie and we live in here in Hollywood. Has anyone approached you to talk about the rights to this and perhaps getting a film made?
From essentially the moment that this was released and we released Latifa's video back, 27 months ago, we've had lots of people that have approached us, but it's not, it's just not appropriate until Latifa's safe and free and she can be living her life. None of us would feel, wouldn't feel right. We need to get Latifa free and out.
Maybe in the future. Speaking of the future, we only have a couple minutes left. I want to go to both you, David Haig, and Marcus Asabri. Tell us what your belief is. I will start with David. What people can do, what you're looking to for the future to help out to save Princess Latifa and Shamsa, if you will, to get them safe again. David?
The first thing to do is everybody watch Latifa's video on YouTube on Free Latifa and watch her own words. And then when you've done that, decide whether or not, your listeners want to be supporting any of the Dubai brands, whether it's Emirates or any of the others. Do your listeners really want to be supporting this man and his brands? I think that's the first thing. And obviously supporting the campaign, there's petitions that you can sign and things like that. But again, it's the more that people speak online and the more that people talk in the media, that's one of the things that so far, I think, certainly changed things and helped protect Latifa. And you've seen the what happened with Princess Hira as well. So I think that's one thing they tried to do at the very beginning. They tried to stop the media. They tried to say, this isn't true, this didn't happen. And it's only because of individual people on social media and the press that basically didn't stop talking about it that we're now here, 2.5 years later, with the UN about to come to a large conclusion with his most recent wife, Princess Hira, divorcing him and fleeing, and it's all across the press. So I think the more that people talk about it, the more that people educate themselves and say that we won't stand for this, the better.
And the website is freelatifa.com, freelatifa.com. Marcus? We only have a minute.
I hope that the message will get across to people, and that maybe even to my cousins, that we are still campaigning for them and we're not giving up. And that's, I think, for me personally, that's the most important thing, that they know that there's people behind them and that they're not alone, because there's nothing worse than that feeling of feeling alone and that nobody cares. And I've been receiving so many messages from people from all over the world saying to keep going. And I hope, who knows, you could listen to this and know that there are people who care and that I care and that, change will happen.
Some very important words. Before we let you go, David, we want to thank you for being with us. And we want to thank Alki David, who's your friend, a mutual friend who's been on the show a couple times, for bringing this to our attention. Now, you're friends with Alki David?
Yeah, Alki's been extremely supportive of Latifa, and so we're very thankful for that.
Yeah, and he has... he told us we have to have you on because it was really important to get the word out. So we appreciate that from Alki David. And David, thanks for staying up late tonight in London. And Marcus, thank you for coming on Gervie's Law and staying up late in Glasgow. We appreciate both of your comments and we wish you all the best in your plight to help Princess Latifah.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. Good night to you. And we have a couple minutes before we sign off. Carrie.
Yes.
Wasn't it nice to take a break from everything that's going on in this country to think that really there's a world out there and unfortunately there are problems in the world.
There's so many. And it's not just...
Not just here.
Not just here. And there's so many problems here. I'm literally starting a campaign for the elderly because of what has been going on these last few months. They feel like Latifah. They feel jailed. We've gotten to Kasem Care's letters where people feel like they are in prison camps. That's the actual term.
Wait a second. I'm confused. They're in prison, but yet everyone is out without social distancing.
The elderly.
No, I understand that. I'm just being facetious. Alan Gervie as I am. Okay. So why are they feeling...
Because nobody's visiting. There's not...
But isn't there a double standard here? If you're permitted to protest, you're permitted to hug each other and walk down the streets with thousands of people, why aren't you permitted to have a few? There was a funeral or at least a memorial service for...
I saw.
George yesterday. And yet there's so many people who have died over the last couple of months with no one there. No, elderly included, with no one at the memorial services.
Right.
So why can't people just go to the senior citizens' places if everyone's permitted to march? Is it a double standard?
It just doesn't make sense. Some of these people only have months to live and they're going to die alone. You'd rather, honestly, I think for me, have the worry of catching the disease, but having somebody there to be with you, especially your last months of life.
Or perhaps you should be consistent. The laws should be consistent. And if you're not going to allow or you're not going to permit under public health, and Alan Dershowitz came out and said it's public health, if that's what the issue is, then protesters shouldn't be allowed to protest regardless of who it is.
It shows that this virus really is 99% survivable rate, and we really got to take a look at things differently.
Well, they started up, and next week we're going to talk about how we are going to deal with it because there's some double standards and inconsistencies. Whatever side of the fence you're on, we need to talk about it. So tune into Gervie's Law next week, same time, same channel, and thanks for listening.
Furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.